Welcome to the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. Have you ever wondered how people succeed in real estate and what steps they took to get there? If so, this podcast is for you. Your hosts, Sayla and Eileen Prack, interview top experts in the real estate community to share with you their real estate journey and how they achieved massive success. Our goal is to provide you with valuable real estate resources and to help you apply it to your own real estate goal. Welcome to today's episode of the How Did They Do It Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Eileen Prack. And today we brought on another fantastic guest for you, Angelo Romora. And he is a real estate executive, investor, and CEO. He has a global portfolio that includes countries like the Bahamas, Croatia, Japan, Australia, and the USA. He's been involved in over 1,000 real estate transactions, including flips and buy and holds. So he has a super fantastic, interesting story about how he's built up his portfolio, got to where he is today, world traveler. So Angelo, welcome to the show. How are you doing today?
Hey, Eileen. Thank you so much for having me. And just to correct you, not just a fantastic guest, I'm the best guest you've ever had.
All right. I love that. So can you share a little bit more about yourself, Angelo? Share a little bit about your background and how did you get started in the world of real estate?
Yeah, well, I'm getting older, I'll tell you that much, you know, and I haven't been doing podcasts for the last couple of years, and I just had one not too long ago, and I was like, damn, time sure does fly, you know, everything just feels like it's just so quick. But look, initially started my investment journey, well, let me take you back a little bit. I quit school at the age of 14. And that was for the purpose of becoming a professional soccer player. I've loved soccer ever since I was 4 years old. So I kind of had to put school aside to be able to train twice a day and hopefully achieve that dream, which I'm very fortunate enough to say that I did. At 18, I played professional soccer in Hong Kong. It was probably still to this day one of my biggest achievements ever because, you know, if you look at how popular football or soccer is and how many people want to achieve it at that level, it's a very, very, very small percentage that do. And, you know, without going into too much detail, I had that pro gig. Reluctantly, I decided to hang up the boots and, you know, take a different path in life. And, you know, without any formal education, what do you do? Where do you go? Started working in construction, you know, so I was sweeping floors and picking up materials and, you know, from sheetrock to studs to food to you name it. That was my kind of gig for around 4 years. But, you know, deep down inside, I always believed there was something bigger and better for me out there. And, you know, working as a laborer for 4 years, I got sick and tired of working for money. And I wanted to figure out a way, how can money work for me? So I went very deep down the self-development path. You know, the passion that I had for football and soccer, somehow miraculously, you know, not being able to read or write properly, I replaced that enormous passion for business, finance, investing, real estate, stocks, you name it. You know, I was soaking everything up like a sponge. You know, being in construction, one thing kind of led to another. Well, flipping houses makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Because I kind of have an idea of, you know, plumbing, electrical and framing and whatnot. So bought my first house in Australia, refinanced, bought another one, and I scaled very quickly, but in a very stupid way. So I was over-leveraged. I was refining out of these properties to continue buying more properties just for the purpose of being able to say I'm cool and I'm a real estate investor, even though I was bleeding money on paper every month. And I think a lot of your listeners might feel in a similar way, especially on the East Coast and West Coast prior to the global financial crisis of 2005, 6, 7, and 8. Easy money, a lot of finance out there and just, you know, over-leveraged. And, you know, I was very fortunate, Eileen, to wake up and smell the roses that real estate is supposed to be profitable. It's supposed to put money in your pocket. It's supposed to supplement your lifestyle, your income, and came across the U.S. market. 2011. Great time. You know, the Aussie dollar was one for one with the American, which was insane. Real estate prices were at rock bottom. One day I woke up and decided to pack my bags and move to the US you know, bought my first house in Kansas City, flipped it, made, I think, like 15 or 20K profit. And I was like, damn, this is better than sliced bread. You know what I mean? And fast forward to today, I stopped counting at 1,000 deals. So I don't even know how many we flipped. Got a real estate investment company in Ohio called Ohio Cashflow. Property management company, real estate brokerage. I've invested and lost money in tech projects, cryptocurrency, an oil fund, owned real estate all over the world. And here I am now talking to you. So there you have it.
Thank you for sharing that high level. I mean, there's so much that we can go into there, but
yeah,
One of the things I wanted to ask you that kind of caught my attention was when you were in Australia, you said you were over leveraging. So was the lending and the environment there in terms of like real estate and how you're buying it and what we think about here in the US, was that like a similar type of environment and market at that time?
Yeah. So look, the Australian market is very expensive. Like right now, I think the average median house price in Sydney is like $1.2 or $1.3 million. So unsustainable, absolutely ridiculous. And so, you know, let me put it this way. I was buying a property, renovating it. When I refinanced out of it, the rent did not cover the mortgage. So I was bleeding money every single month with the hopes that the property was going to go up in value more than I was losing in the monthly cash flow. Look, it's a great strategy in a boom market. Well, actually, it's not a great strategy. It's gambling. It's a gambler strategy in a boom market where you can make a large capital gain if property prices go up. So it doesn't really matter if you really lose on the cash flow because you can offset with your offset that with your income, especially in Australia. You're allowed to do that. But yeah, it was just a stupid way to invest. And, you know, again, I'm very fortunate that I was very quickly able to wake up and realize that this is not the path I should take.
So what did you do when you realized that? Did you end up selling all your properties on Australia and then moved everything to the US?
Correct. Well, look, I was over $1 million in debt. So I really didn't have much to move. I literally came to the US with around 10 grand in my pocket. So nothing to brag about and millions of dollars in debt. Again, my mistakes. But over time, I was able to kind of liquidate those properties and not really lose any money on paper. But, you know, that definitely helped with the monthly cash flow because I wasn't bleeding money every single month from a cash flow standpoint. So I moved to the US and pretty much started fresh.
So when you moved to the US, how did you land in Kansas City for your first house then? Out of all the places in the world, why Kansas City?
Right? It was because I love the beautiful beaches and surfing, you know what I mean? A lot of it in Kansas City. No, look, you know, your network equals your net worth, right? So the more people you speak to on a daily basis and you know, as the old kind of cliche saying goes, you are the five people that you surround yourself with. They bring you up or they pull you down, right? So, you know, I established a lot of relationships in the US all over. I even invested in upstate New York. I had a few properties there. But, you know, I think just the relationships at the time I had led me to Kansas City. From there, that was kind of a stepping stone to move to Ohio, you know, where I've been for the last 10 years.
The first house that you bought in Kansas City, you made you flipped it and then you made a 15K profit, took that and then put that into the next property.
Correct. Correct. And then just kind of snowballed from there. Look, initially, Eileen, what my goal was is, you know, I'll come to the US, I'll buy and hold around 10 houses and I'll move back home to Australia and live happily ever after. But as with anything in life, you know, it can always be bigger. It can always be better. God bless America. It's the best country in the world when it comes to capitalism and making money. And then you kind of get sucked into the hustle. Everyone is going 100 miles an hour. So I had to also. And, you know, before you know it, you start flipping properties. Then you're like, okay, now I can start assisting other investors to flip properties or to, you know, invest in real estate because what our business does is passive income and turnkey properties. So from me initially just wanting to build my own portfolio, I started assisting other investors that wanted to invest out of state and out of country. So now, you know, other investors are buying my properties. Well, now I need a property management company in-house because you can't manage successfully unless you have in-house property management. So then I set up a property management company. And before you know it, it just absolutely snowballs into a monster with 78 heads. And you've got 10 businesses and things are getting out of hand. And again, I was also very fortunate enough to realize that, you know, adding more zeros to your bank account will not make you happier or healthier. So we dialed that back 2 or 3 years ago, really pulled back and just started focusing more on health, meditating, exercising. I still work hard and I still push. But, you know, I wanted to see the world. I wanted to travel more. I wanted to explore. I wanted to get to know myself better than just by being a robot and working, you know, 100 hours a week like I did for a good 7 or 8 years.
So taking from your experience in Australia and how you handled that real estate market while you're building out your portfolio over there, moving into and growing and understanding the market a little bit better, how did you start building out a portfolio that was more stabilized in terms of, is it just fix and flipping and then moving it over to the next property? Were you not as over leveraged as you're getting to the other types of properties? Like, what was your strategy to start to grow?
Yeah, great question, Eileen. I mean, look, pretty much, I mean, you know, we're based in Toledo, Ohio. So back in the day, you know, we were buying homes in B-class areas, believe it or not. Yes, Toledo is a working class market. You know, it's a working class city. It's a very kind of tertiary market because if you mention Ohio, people just think about Cincinnati, Cleveland, and Columbus. Toledo is literally the fourth biggest city. So no one thinks about it. But just recently, I read that it was the number one voted market for potential growth this year. And it's always been a very affordable and cash flow positive market. My point being, you know, back in the day, we were buying properties in which used to be heavily owner-occupied areas before these folks lost their homes to foreclosure for $15,000, $20,000. We were investing $15,000, $20,000 into these homes, and they were renting for $700 or $800 per month. So that is just an absolutely ridiculous return on investment. And, you know, they were worth 40, 50, 60% more at the time than what we paid to purchase them and fix them. And there was foreclosures left, right, and center. People were selling them like hotcakes. So that kind of turned into a business form. You know, at one time I had a large portfolio. I built my portfolio to around 20 properties. Then the demand got so high from investors, I had to start selling them my properties because I couldn't fix and flip enough for them. But it's just a, you know, heaven and earth type of comparison. You know, Australia, you can't get anything from the $1 million. And then you go to Toledo, Ohio, you're buying $15,000 houses, you know, cheaper than a car. Now times have changed. Things are more expensive, but it's still a very affordable and great cash flow market. But yeah, you know, I guess for the most part, it was buy, fix, and flip, rinse and repeat. And, you know, we were selling around 10 deals a month at the time. And then, of course, property management was there in place too, and it still is today. But yeah.
So as you were grinding and you were working 100-hour work weeks, you know, putting in that effort, eventually you realize working all this, making more and more money, adding to your portfolio wasn't giving you the happiness or fulfillment in your life. So what changed that thought? Like, how did that happen and come about for you?
Well, that's a great question. And I just had an interview not too long ago and the interviewer asked me, what would you do differently? And I said, I wouldn't do it again. And I still stand behind that. I wouldn't do it again. There's too much pain, too much suffering. It's too hard. So anyone listening, if you want to go down the path of entrepreneurship and really building a big business and getting to a point of achieving financial freedom, you're going to have to work very, very hard, much harder than anyone else, especially someone in my shoes. And I'm sure a lot of your listeners aren't in my shoes because I was behind the eight ball from the start, you know, not having any formal education, not having any financial backing, moving to the US, a foreign country. Yes, the language is still the same, but, you know, everything is different. Look, I just became burnt out. You know, and not burnt out, Eileen, I'd say five times burnt out. I just couldn't do it anymore. I mean, I could, but, you know, my health started deteriorating significantly. I think that was the deciding factor. Kidney stones, stomach ulcers, anxiety, panic attacks, it wasn't worth it. You know, popping Xanax every single day just to stay calm and normal, not calm, just normal. I didn't want to do it anymore. And, you know, literally there was a point where I was like, you know, let's sell the business. Let's give it all up. Look after our investors always, first and foremost. The saving grace for me was being able to systemize the business from a standpoint where we literally downsized the company by 70% and introduced virtual assistants. And we've got a few companies that operate in a way where if someone decides to leave for whatever reason, they've already got a backup train, so we never skip a beat. That was the saving grace in my business, Eileen. You know, I think artificial intelligence is going to be a saving grace for a lot of people too. But, you know, before it was virtual assistants, and still to this day, these individuals are fantastic. I love them. I've got a smile on my face right now because what used to hit me hard and still hits me hard today in business is when you have to let someone go. And I don't like seeing demotivated people that are taking advantage of business owners, because you're not just, I always say, you're not taking advantage of me, you're taking advantage of yourself and your family. If you're going to, you know, muck around with the blinds 8 hours a day instead of trying to do the job, just do the job, you know. So that was that really hurt my heart. And that's probably the biggest factor that burnt me out was the people factor in the business, employees in particularly.
And especially when you're, like you mentioned, you came to the US, you had maybe $10,000 in your bank account, but you've been able to build it up to this portfolio that you have today, been able to achieve your financial freedom. But during this time, as you've been working and chugging and just putting in, you know, all this effort in there, was there ever a time when you felt that you were hesitating or you might not be able to get or achieve to the goals that you set out to do? Especially maybe if you didn't have your family here or other support and you're doing it all on your own.
Great question. Every day. I mean, that's what gets you out of bed in the morning. It's like a bee stung your ass. You know what I mean? There's always that fear factor. Now, granted, look, I've gone down a different path with meditation and studying philosophy from a stoicism standpoint, studying various religions, Catholicism, Quran, and you name it. So it put me in a different kind of mindset where, you know, I just don't think like I did back in the day, but I still try and switch my mind off sometimes. Like, I am going to live forever and I have to succeed. I have to achieve. You know, what pushes me nowadays is family. You know, I've got a lot of family that I want to help out and that I have been helping out. So that's a motivating factor for me. But every day you question yourself. And I think that's just normal. You're kind of in fear every day. You know what I mean? And I remember we've been down to our last bloody $1,000 in our company operating account so many times that I even started even getting like, I didn't even care anymore because it was just another day in the office. Oh, shit. Where's the next sale coming in? I've got no clue, but something always works out. There's always light at the end of the tunnel. You know, everyone listening, you just got to show up every day. It's as simple as that. Just don't give up. Wake up, show up, do the job, and eventually things will start to turn for you. If you're going through a tough time now, you know, if you're going through a good time, don't forget what goes up must come down and what is down must come up too. So make sure, you know, I was once told by a very, very successful man. He said, when times are bad, stay afloat. When times are good, don't lose at all. So when times are very bad, just stay afloat. Just do enough to survive. And when times are good, don't be stupid that you blow it all on stupid crap, like buying a car, house, holiday home and this. Still be in control, be humble, and make sure you don't lose everything. It was good advice.
So while you were here also in the U.S., it looks like you also invested outside of different countries at the same time. What kind of drove the investments in the various countries that you have been to and why those countries?
Stupidity and ego. You know, I guess we can refer to it as the Napoleon syndrome. The only thing is I'm 6'3" and 230 pounds and I'm pretty fit. So I don't think I've got the Napoleon syndrome, but it was like, you know, you make a bit of money, you're successful, and now you're like, oh, I want that dream Bahamas home. Oh, why not buy a waterfront condo in Japan? Oh, you know what? That's not enough. Let's buy a lot of land on an island in the Bahamas. You know, look, again, I think just stupidity and ego. It was great. I love the Bahamas. I've lived there for 6 months. It's fantastic. I love the people. I still own that lot, but I pretty much liquidated everything else. I sold my apartment in Japan. I sold the properties in the Bahamas. Less is more. The less you have to think about all of these things, they just convolute your judgment, your thought process. They're distractions, unnecessary distractions. You can't drive five cars at once and you can't live in five properties at the same time, right? So make your little, you know, 1,000 square foot area or whatever it is comfortable. Make sure everyone's around you is comfortable. They're happy, but you don't need all of the silly stuff. Granted, no regrets. I never have any regrets. It was a fantastic learning experience. I mean, look, I know how to buy real estate all over the world. You know, I've looked at deals in Italy, Croatia, where my family's from. We actually own a property there. Japan, bought a property there. The Bahamas, Australia, of course. So it just, you know, this was all a great learning experience. And for me, I always say information is power. Right. And options equal safety. So information is power. Options equal safety. Because look at during COVID times, you know, I was able to easily move from Europe to the US to the Bahamas without being restricted. Geopolitical tensions right now, God forbid, some kind of war. So the more you know about other economies, about other markets, you can move like the wind, God forbid, if it comes to that.
So after investing in all these other different countries, how do you see that comparison versus investing in the United States and being able to build a portfolio?
No comparison. God bless America. Best country in the world. Stick to the US, not just from a financial standpoint. You know, I spent a lot of time in Europe spending it with family, and I'm definitely back now for good. I'm not leaving anywhere. When I booked this interview with you, I was still in Europe. That's why the time zones got a little bit conflicted, but anyone that thinks the grass is greener on the other side, I can guarantee you it's not. This is the best country in the world. I'm blessed to be able to live here. This is the only country that I will die for, even though I'm Australian and my parents are Croatian. I love Australia. You know, in Africa, they say wherever you were born, that's where your umbilical cord is buried. It's always going to be home. Agreed. But this country, these people, this system, everything about it is a dream come true. And you can't, like, just from a real estate investment standpoint and take any market into consideration. You know, they all have their pros and cons. East Coast, West Coast, very expensive, but they always appreciate in value a ton. Midwest is more cash flow positive, lower entry price. You know, you cannot compare any other country, in my opinion, when it comes to real estate investing, real estate strategies, passive income, cash flow, wholesaling, flipping, syndication, you name it. This is the country to be from a real estate investment standpoint and any business standpoint.
So, Angelo, what is next for you?
Next for me, wow, put me on the spot.
This whole interview has been putting you on the spot.
Well, those were easy questions. This one's a next for me, just to be happy and healthy. I know it sounds cliche, but it's not that easy. You walk the streets and ask how many people are happy. That a lot of people don't even know what happiness is. They're robots. They get caught up in their 9-to-5. They're just hustling, or they're not even hustling, but they're not happy. And a lot of people aren't healthy. That's why everyone's taking Ozempic, right? Because everyone's overweight. Look, I guess from a business standpoint, you know, we're scaling our property management company because I felt the shift in the market a couple of years ago. So before, 70% of our business was focused on a higher cash flow, turnkey flips, helping out estate investors. We flipped that around. 70% of our business is now focused on Oz Realty, our property management company, scaling that. I feel that property management is a beautiful business. It's a predictable business. It's a very steady business. Rent is always due on the first of the month. You know what fees you're getting. You know what expenses are. It's recession-proof. Food and shelter, Eileen, are the two most important things to humanity. So people will always need a roof over their head until Elon Musk sends us to Mars, but we'll see about that. So, you know, that's from a business standpoint. From a personal financial standpoint, I'm heavily invested in the stock market. I've made quite a few risky moves there. And if they pan out, that is pretty much going to be even a bigger retirement for me than what I've been living since I was 28 years old, meaning, you know, hopefully I'll have a sufficient amount of capital where I can just park it in treasury bonds and go to sleep and not have to get up at 7 a.m. in the morning anymore. Well, that's actually late compared to how early I was getting up back in the day. From a kind of personal, non-financial aspect, again, just what I said before, being healthy and happy.
So, Angelo, how has real estate investing impacted your life?
Another good question. I can say in a good way and also in a bad way.
What's the good way and what's the bad way?
Good way is financial freedom. You can help people that are close to you, your family, your friends. You become more knowledgeable, more resilient. Again, financial freedom, right? It's fantastic to be financially free, but in a bad way, it would be health-wise, going too quick, too hard, and just, you know, compromising your health to make money and succeed as an entrepreneur and a business owner.
And what is the one thing you know now about real estate that you wish you knew when you first started?
Take your time. If I could turn back time, I wouldn't do it again, number one. But if I was to do it again, I would definitely be more patient. I wouldn't work 100 hours a week. You know, it's a life in a way. I know it sounds cliche, but it's the raw truth in my opinion. A life in a way is a marathon, not a sprint. And I was sprinting. And you can only sprint for so long until your heart pops.
So when you say you wouldn't do it again, does that mean you wouldn't get into real estate at all again? Or you would do it a different way? What does that mean to you?
Look, again, I don't want to get too far down the philosophical path. You know, but sometimes I stop and wonder and I think about, you know, people that maybe don't. And I'm not talking down on anyone, but I never do. You know, you never look down on anyone unless you're helping them up. But, you know, I sometimes think to myself, you know what? It wouldn't be bad being the average Joe. No worry in the world. You have your 9-to-5. You have a little wife, two kids, some shitty little house somewhere. You come home. You forget about work. You got a car. You don't have to worry about anything. No one asks you for anything because no one relies on you for anything. And I think Jesus said it in the Bible, the more you get, the more is expected of you. You know what I mean? And that's kind of the truth. So what I'm trying to say is I kind of keep thinking maybe a simpler life, a more stupider life per se, and not knowing so much and doing so much would be easier. So that's what I mean by saying like I wouldn't do it all again. But you know what? You put me on the spot. I need to think about that. I need to think about that again. I haven't taken a deeper dive if I wouldn't do it all again. Maybe I would do it all again. But I would do it very differently. There you go. You got me. You got me, Eileen. You got me. You got me.
So, Angelo, what is the one thing that sets successful people apart in real estate investing?
Man, the only one I know is hard work. You know, so the harder you're willing to work, the more successful you'll be. But let's put a caveat to that. Work smart instead of hard.
And Angelo, where can our listeners find out more about you and where and what you're doing in this space?
Google is your best friend. Angelo Romora. You can just Google me. I got my Wikipedia page and a lot of funny, crazy videos without any pants on. Disclaimer, MA 15+. Website, Ohio Cashflow. That's our turnkey business. Property management is ozrealty.house. We're based in Toledo, Ohio. Happy to help in any way.
Awesome. Angelo, thank you so much for all of your time today. It was a really pleasure to have you here on the show.
Thanks for listening and thanks for having me.
And thank you for listening to our podcast today, brought to you by Bonavest Capital. We would really appreciate it if you can go to iTunes right now and leave a rating and written review. Also, please don't forget to subscribe so you can always get the latest episodes. You can also connect with us on Facebook, How Did They Do It Real Estate. We'd love to hear your feedback and any topics that you're interested in for future episodes. If you're anything like Zayla and me and believe that real estate investing is a great way to create passive income and build long-term wealth, check out our free apartment syndication due diligence checklist for passive investors at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Zayla and I created this checklist for ourselves as we evaluated different multifamily syndication opportunities as a passive investor. So we would love to share it with you so you can use it as a resource as well. Download your free copy today at bonavestcapital.com/checklist. Lastly, to learn more about us, you can go to bonavestcapital.com and fill out the contact us page so you can speak to us directly. Nothing on the show should be considered as specific personal advice. Please consult your legal, tax, and real estate professionals for individualized advice.